clear and present danger to the United States.
The CNN original series Declassified returns. See the true stories of the agencies protecting us.
They're secrets for a reason.
Nobody is untouchable.
Mike Rogers hosts Declassified, Sunday, September 29th at 9 on CNN.
Oh, boy.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. It's back.
Mike Rogers, longtime friend of the show,
mm-hmm.
who, even back from when he was in Congress,
yep.
he went on to be, he was a former FBI bigwig, then he ran for Congress in Michigan, spent a lot of time in Chicago, he's got family here, he was in the Chicago FBI office, he then went to Congress and very quickly rose to the level of the chairman of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, which is a very big deal. And then he left public life, went into the private sector, and that's why you see him on the CNN with the Declassified, which, you know, once a year they run. How many episodes are you going to do here, Mike?
Eight episodes.
And
this is my favorite season, by the way. I'm really, we kind of figured out how to do this. It's great. You're going to love it.
Now, what the promo for the entire season has been running for the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like it's between you and Lisa Ling, where she's naked. I don't know which is a better set of promos, but I got to say that you're kind of driving a little nuts here because there it seems like a lot of different things. There's counterterrorism, there's domestic terrorism, there's all kinds of what is your favorite episode so far? For this upcoming season?
I have to say, I really like, there's a couple of really strong episodes. Well, I think they're all great, obviously. It's like a father. Love all your children equally. The very first episode is going to be pretty great because it was like a real-time event where they were chasing a terrorist down. He was ready to go, locked and loaded, had the bombs assembled, and was going to blow up the trains in New York.
Mm.
And he was driving there. To get there. And so all of the suspense and action was like a, you know, really like a Hollywood movie, the way it played out. But it played out in real life with real folks trying to put a stop to the guy. So pretty exciting episode. And that's the first one you'll see. Then there's some really other good ones in there. The first big cyber case, the Silk Road cyber case that actually the Secret Service did, had some international flavor and some government conspiracy stuff. And there's really, really good stuff this year. You're going to love them.
I love them all.
I
anyway,
do too.
Hold on one second. We're going to try and fix your phone. I don't know. What we do is we're going to rush somebody to Washington and have them actually fix this phone.
Here, stand over here, Mike. Stand right here.
Here, just give me your phone. Give me your phone for a second.
Shake it a little bit.
Jeff, Jeff Carlin, our long-suffering producer, literally is at O'Hare right now, uh-huh. getting on a flight, going to Washington.
He's fast.
He just landed in Washington. He just found Mike.
Good.
He's now tinkering with the phone.
He knows technology.
Yeah.
That's the nice part about Jeff. He'll be able to tell him what's what.
Oh, for God's sake.
Straight.
You know, it's simple.
Well, and there were so many details that he was talking about that are interesting. I just missed every other word.
Although I got to say that Lisa Ling, I don't know if people, you know, watch the CNN, but that Lisa Ling show, mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, she's always...
This Is Life, it's called.
Right. Yeah. So, and it's always about titillating things, like, you know, it's strippers and porn and you know, other weird things. And that this is her, so she's got this whole thing about, like, nudists and porn.
Right, the first, the season premiere for her is called Porn Ed.
Yeah.
How pornography is shaping a generation's perception of sex and intimacy.
Oh, very interesting.
Very different than
right.
Mike Rogers.
We got Mike's. The exact opposite of Mike's.
Definitely. You won't see me naked on TV.
Okay.
I can rest assured. Nobody wants to see that. I actually want people to watch. That's the whole thing.
All right. And that is a week from Sunday, right? Is that when the premiere is?
It's 29th, actually. So
oh,
it's
right. 2 weeks.
Oh, wait.
Two weeks of great suspense to watch the thing. You're going to love it. I'm telling you. It's a lot of fun.
It is an amazing job. And the thing is that you also have access to being able to tell that story in a different way so that, you know, you work with the writers and the producers and you figure out a way to what you can and you can't say. And again, it like as the title, you know, it not only implies, it actually does. It's right. It's this declassified information that you're able to talk about now.
Yeah. When I started this whole thing, and I'm a big believer in keeping secret, that My goal was not to break some kind of classified news. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to participate in that. But the stories to be, this story just really hasn't been told. Tell it in a compelling way and through the voices of the people who live these cases, to me, is a much powerful way to bring a real case, give you a real idea how all of this works. And it's stuff you just haven't heard before. And then you see the emotion of the people who are actually trying to go through this event. It's really powerful.
You know what? I can't remember if you did this story or not, but there's a great story about the Chicago FBI office and the cartridge bomber. This guy, one of the great designers of bombs, and when I say great, I mean just skilled, not a great person, obviously, in Yemen, was sending printer cartridges they looked like printer cartridges, but they were bombs, and the whole idea was to detonate the aircraft on its approach to O'Hare. And the story of how they caught that guy, it's long and it's detailed, and it was one agent in the Chicago office who just was so dogged of trying to figure out what the clues were about what the labeling, because they were able to stop this package, but only for a temporary period of time because they couldn't figure out what it was and what they had actually found on the packaging, which was, this guy's own sort of flourish to himself. That because all these guys have these egos and they want to prove something is what cracked that case. And those are the kinds of stories that don't get told,
right? And they're the fascinating part, I think, of your series, because they get into details of the fine work of people in the intelligence community, of our law enforcement, and how they're able to crack these cases before they do damage.
I don't know if you remember the Ana Montes story. She was a Cuban, recruited very young in college, asked to go to work for the U.S. government, went to work at the Pentagon. This is a story we told. And was just giving away devastating information. And, of course, when she would give it to the Cubans, her agent handlers, they were passing it on to the Russians and the Soviets. So she was very, very devastating. And before we were getting to launch all of the operations into Afghanistan after 9/11, she had gotten briefed on all the operation plans. Now, can you imagine if all of those operational plans had ended up in Moscow? They would have tried to bloody our nose just to see us fall on our face. Mm-hmm. And they ended up deciding to have to arrest her that night. But the purpose of that was there was one agent who worked in Department of Defense. He was a counterintelligence guy who for years kept saying, we have a leak in this organization, and couldn't get people bought in, candidly couldn't get the FBI bought in. And he just was painstakingly going through all of this data, marrying it up to the information that was getting released, looking at travel records for years of hundreds of employees trying to figure this thing out. And he's the one that kind of narrowed it down to this person, finally got the FBI to go, oh my gosh, I think you're right. I mean, it was a very emotional story for him because he was, people were saying, hey, I think you're a little crazy on this. He just kept right on this case, and he was really the one that flipped that case. And if it wasn't for that dogged FBI agent in Chicago or this dogged counterintelligence agent at DOD, these cases may have never been broken. He'd have had, dead people to prove it.
Yeah. True.
Speaking of Russia, I want to get your thoughts on the story that broke earlier this week. So much has happened this week. I don't even know where to begin. But let's go back to this, the issue of the exfiltration of the CIA asset. I mean, obviously, I don't know, how much you can talk about this, but just in general terms, the idea that we had to we do move those assets around if we can, right? And this story, it's taken on a really, really kind of a political bent because the people who want to beat up the president are using it to beat up the president. That there's other people who are trying to beat up the Obama administration with it. But what is your thought on that? Just in general, when you have an asset like that that is really at the very tippity top, right? Somebody who can take pictures, as it was said, of stuff on Vladimir Putin's desk. I mean, how valuable and how long can those last in place before you really start to worry about it and you got to pull them out?
Well, anytime you get a source with that kind of access, you go through this process. So let me just say that they didn't recruit him and he was in that office. This is somebody that was grown up into this responsibility and getting these jobs. And it takes years of development and talking and all kinds of things that happen during the course of a recruitment like this. And finally, something where he was probably worried about his ability to impact the Russian government in an appropriate way. He said, I don't think I can do it. The only way I can do it is maybe by betraying my country and telling them what bad things he's doing. That being said, once they get in this position, you have to remember every day there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of counterintelligence agents in Moscow with the FSB and SVR who are trying to catch people doing exactly what he was doing. And so, and they take it seriously. You're not going to get a trial. You're going to get a walkout back and and two shots in the back of the head. And so it is really life or death stuff. And the information is so sensitive because there's very few people that can get access to that information. And so just like the guy at the Pentagon I just told you to catch, Anna Montez, mm-hmm. Painstakingly went through that. There's somebody on the other side doing that. And if information leaks out publicly in any way, as an example, somebody walked in and said, President Putin, we have 50 trucks parked at the airport ready to go. There's only five people that know about it. He sees it. The report gets out and says 50 trucks are at the airport. Somebody's going to go, hey, wait a minute. We can start narrowing that list down about how many people had access to that information. And so it wasn't that somebody fingered the guy. What happened was there was enough information that got out, some publicly, some not, some in conversations, that they started saying, uh-oh, his life is going to be in danger. And the closer they get, the more dangerous it is. Let's just pull him out. And it happens before. This isn't the first time it's happened. It's just I've never seen one this public this soon after it happened that an agent like this gets exfiltrated. And by the way, every agent that they're handling, the CIA, they have a plan to get them out. There's a pretty elaborate planning that goes into making sure that these folks get taken out and live to tell their story.
Well, can we safely assume that they're doing the same thing to us? That there would be people that in highly placed, like you're talking about Anna Montez. I mean, that should we always be vigilant? They're always vigilant about looking for people in the White House or in other agencies and, highly placed people and agencies that might be turning information in?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, the Chinese have really ramped up their human intelligence. You'll see a lot of FBI arrests within the last 3 years have been Chinese espionage efforts here in the United States. Really ramped it up. Russians the same way. They're working on Americans. Just a few years ago, there were more Russian intelligence officers in the United States than there was at the height of the Cold War. Part of that is because it was easier to get them in after the Cold War was over. But it just tells you the level of interest they have of recruiting Americans to do bad things. And sometimes it starts out very innocently and can end up just with lethal consequences if somebody is co-opted and they become a spy for the Russian government or the Chinese government. And we're doing these arrests all of the time in the United States.
Thank God. I want to ask you about, Mike, I want to ask you about the departure of John Bolton and what's to come now. I saw you made a bit of news when you said on CNN that the decision, Trump's decision to hire him in the first place was like speed dating gone wrong. What did you mean by that?
They were oil and vinegar from the beginning, I know John Bolton. He's a very aggressive guy. He's very strong opinions about the way the world ought to look and how it ought to be. And Trump had was completely on the other side of that for a lot of it. And so when he went into this organization, you had outside meetings outside of the White House with other cabinet officials because they didn't want to talk to the Bolton, who's the National Security Advisor. I mean, all of that is very messy. And so I just didn't think he was the right guy to go in just by the way he operated. as the national security advisor. That is a collaborative job. Your job as a national security advisor, and really, in many ways, it's the worst part of the national security job. You're supposed to coordinate all of these agencies, right? It's in, they call it an interagency process, to get the best information laid on the president's desk so he can make a good decision every day about national security issues. And so that collaborative piece got missed in the Bolton hiring, and it just didn't happen. And so I saw that immediately, knew that this thing was doomed for failure, and it was.
Let's be honest. You know, we've all been around this block a few times.
Sure.
Obviously, the president, you know, he sees people on television. He likes what they're saying. John Bolton is a tough talker. He's a guy that a lot of the neoconservatives love, and that especially hawks love. He's like a take no prisoners kind of guy. Will go to war at the drop of a hat. And the issue was that the president wants, he likes the idea of being a tough guy. So today, when he was talking about this in the White House, he took a bunch of shots at Bolton for, oh, you know,
boy, didn't he ever.
Is he such a tough guy? Well, I'm a tougher guy. I believe in tough solutions. He wanted to talk about how tough he is, but the president was going to have the Taliban over to Camp David. I mean, that is not tough. That is, that's reckless.
Well, now you're really going to get me on my soapbox. The fact that they were by the way, and I opposed, when Obama was trying to negotiate with the Taliban in a position of weakness, I opposed it then too when I was chairman. And I see what Trump is doing, and it's a lot like this Obama negotiation strategy, which was, we're going to tell them we want a deal, we're going to pull troops out, we'll give them what they want, let's give them anything we can do to get out. And that, to me, is really a dangerous way to do this. You never want to negotiate with these people. And by the way, when they invited them, they had been doing bombings, they being the Taliban, in Afghanistan just about weekly, and they were targeting innocent men and women and children. They were shooting up girls' schools, and they were allowing them to negotiate this deal as the United Arab Afghani Emirate, which, by the way, we have a Afghan republic there that's elected by citizens. And that, to me, was a slap in the face to every effort we had to at least try to give the Afghan people the security of their own country. And so I thought this thing was doomed from the beginning. I thought it was naive. It was dangerous. And, of course, had there not had the bombing a day before this meeting, I think it would have gone forward, and it unfortunately took the life of a U.S. service member. You know, it's that you cannot deal with these people the way that you would deal in a business deal. I'm telling you that you have to show strength. You have to show them that you're willing to finish the job if they don't want to come to the table. And we did that all backwards.
All right. Well, Mike, this is a long way of promoting Declassified, which is going to start 2 weeks from Sunday on CNN. It's a great series.
It is.
You like Clancy novels, if you like real-life stories about, you know, what really goes on in national security and international security, this is the show for you. Mike, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, both of you. And by the way, if one of your listeners are confused that Lisa Ling might make an appearance without clothes in Declassified, you go ahead, go with that.
She does.
Yes,
to see
she does.
If that really
yes,
does that. I saw it.
I like the joint promo.
I heard it does.
Yeah, I think you're gaining from that more than she is. I'm just saying.
I just want to say that Mike does not look as good in bunny slippers, I think, as she does, but that's a separate issue. All right, thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks,
Mike. There he goes, Mike Rogers, certified badass. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. What's going on in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom?
The planned documentary on gangster John Dillinger isn't moving forward. We'll bring you the latest coming up.